We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
1037 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 1037 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Thursday to you. And it is a Thursday, April 18 edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 1037 The Game. Ben Love here at the Tap Room. And for at least a while, yeah, the skies are gray, but the rain has stopped here in the River Ranch area, and maybe it's parted just in time for us to give you a full three-hour tour. Glad to be joined, as always, by the famous Clint D. Inside the 237 Roof Studios, remember, no job too big or too small, just call Lafayette Roofing, 237-7663. I don't always give the game plan our course that we're going to chart up front these days. But when you have a great guest coming early, I want to make sure you stick around. In case you needed any more incentive, Ted Scott coming aboard in our next segment. About 10 minutes from right now, a 19-year tour caddy currently on the bag for Bubba Watson. What was it like to be at the 2019 Masters? What does he make out of Tiger Woods' ascendance? Back to being numero uno plus. Who allows Bubba to button it all the way up to the top? That and a lot more. Ted Scott joins us in our next segment at 4:30. Hunt Palmer talking LSU baseball. And yes, first pitch tonight has been moved back. 8 p.m. LSU versus Florida. Mikhail Hilliard will get the start. Zach Hess may come in relief. We'll ask Hunt Palmer what he thinks about that at 4:30. And Jeff Horchek, Caleb Y, Pospot 2 in midday will be with us live from 5 until 5:30. And that's just tip of the iceberg stuff. I know it's wet outside in a lot of areas. Be safe. We'll give you traffic and weather updates as we can. But if the roads, the weather permits, we'd love for you to come out and join us. We got a huge program today. They got a huge night in the River Ranch area. They will still have rhythms on the river. It's pushed back 30 minutes. Start time at about 6 p.m. Chubby Carrier playing tonight, 8 to 11 here at the Taproom River Ranch. It'll be Soul Sound from Jones and Hollers. That's what's going on. Here is what's up. And here's what I've scooped in the last 24 hours. Yesterday, a lot of live bullets flying, right? Joe Oliva out officially right as our show began on a Wednesday. Scott Woodward unofficially in. Well, now all of that is in stone. And there were a few people that made sure to reach out to me after yesterday's show. Hey, that's how you know that people are tuned in and important people. And they wanted me to be assured of a few things so that I could assure you. So let me get down to that right now. And some of it was verified in a Ross Dellinger account on SI.com Sports Illustrated. This was a month-long process. And so do the math. Not long after Will Wade was suspended, I think the powers that be, and don't kid yourself, that's not F. King Alexander, that's Richard Lipsey and some of the Board of Supervisors members, but the powers that be, they got the wheels churning. They saw what was transpiring with Wade as their opportunity to be the final straw to get rid of Joe Oliva. And then I do believe F. King Alexander. More on that in a moment. And so they put these wheels in motion. Richard Lipsey and company able to get business brokered from the Final Four up in Minneapolis. And so I told you, it's the summit, and it's where you have to go find your coach. Well, apparently, it's where you can also help find and solidify your next AD. So good on LSU. They did this one right. They got their ducks in a row, and then they let the guillotine fall on the current AD. Normally it's coach we're talking about. This time around it was AD. So the process was done right. But here's the assurance part that you're probably really going to enjoy. And I'm going to suggest to you it's maybe the most important part of all of this. More important than who is what they're allowed to do in their role. I've seen it too often at LSU. I'm told that Scott Woodward will have power needed to do his job at a degree his predecessor, Joe Oliva, never knew. I'm told that this was negotiated and that while it sounds good, it smells good, for many of you it feels good to say, you know what? Scott Woodward just wanted to come home, right? His rent's still living in Baton Rouge. He's got a camp down the bayou. Thank you for continuing to point that out. Deli, Ross Dellinger has been killing me with that, but he's not wrong. The idea that it's where he went to high school, Catholic of Baton Rouge. It's where he went to college, LSU. It's where he cut his teeth under Dr. Mark Emmert. All of that just makes you feel warm and cozy inside. But it's not the sole reason why. And the dollars aren't either. Because as we told you yesterday, before Billy Lucci, TexAx.com, and his report, as we told you yesterday, A&M was always going to win any bidding war that they wanted to with LSU. It's been impressed upon me, and so I'm impressing it upon you, that Woodward was able to negotiate one heck of a hand at the table in terms of autonomy. And if you don't think that's important in a political place like LSU, in a political state like Louisiana, you are out of your ever-loving mind. That is among the best news of all in this whole case, at least in my opinion. And speaking of political, the other thing that was stressed to me is that everyone is going to be aligned. Everyone, and I think this is somewhat important, will be a Louisiana guy moving forward. So let me walk you through this. And I'm sure many of you understand this chapter and verse. But don't get it twisted. At the top of this thing, you've got John Bel Edwards, the governor. But he wants to remain at the top of this thing. Wouldn't you know it? It's an election year. And so JBE, presumably now backed by Richard Lipsey, unlike the last election cycle, you've got the governor. You've got one of the biggest power brokers in the state in Lipsey. You've got the AD that he wanted, and that I think everybody is very happy with, and Scott Woodward. Again, all Louisiana guys so far. And, boy, you would have to think that F. King Alexander is next on the chopping block. And you would have to think that his replacement, awfully safe bet, isn't it? That it's a Louisiana guy, and moreover, that it's a Richard Lipsey guy. Make sure that you connect all the dots. Hell, I'm doing it for you. Just make sure that you got the wax out and you're listening. Everyone is aligned. Everyone is a Louisiana guy. And I didn't even mention Ed Orgeron and all that. But everybody's in line here. If you think politics and football don't mix, you're in the wrong state. That's exactly what's at play here. And I'm not criticizing it. I'm suggesting that when everything is aligned and everybody's in lockstep, you can arguably have your most success. I know that Nick Saban wasn't a Louisiana guy, but when Saban and Emmer and Woodward and everybody in the early Y2K part of this millennium, when everybody was in line, then that went okay for everybody, didn't it? They're trying to get the band back together, a 2019 edition. And the final thing that I could tell you today, that yesterday we kind of developed and cultivated this theory mid-show. Shout out to the caller who got the wheels turning on this. Mid-show, I worked out the theory that, you know what? They found a way, LSU brass, to not have to pay Joe Oliva that buyout. The rest of that $725K that he makes as a base a year, they don't have to pay him that because they reassigned him. And yeah, they reassigned him to F. King Alexander, who, if they toss him aside next, and I think that's awfully likely, well, boy, I think everybody in his department would go by the wayside as well. So that theory that we developed during the show yesterday, I'm told that it's not far-fetched at all, that Oliva could be out again from this new position. I'm sure many of you won't come to the tap room and cry tears in your beers over that. And so yesterday, there was a lot happening during the show. Today, I'm doing my best to take you behind the scenes of how it happened, why it's happening, and why there might just be a shared vision this time around. And boy, that would be nice. Ted Scott, Hunt Palmer coming aboard back-to-back in today's program. We are just getting started. Don't go anywhere. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
Winners eat nachos at a ball game and snag a foul ball barehanded without getting a drop of cheese on their shirt. Winners ride home with Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Many doubted we'd ever see it. But here it is.
The return to glory.
Incredible. There was so much going on in the world of South Louisiana sports. Feels like that was forever ago. It was almost exactly 100 hours ago. Tiger Woods wins the 2019 Masters. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Right back into the Taproom River Ranch on 103.7 The Game. Our next guest knows all about that moment and how to win at Augusta National. Well, because he's there and his partner has done it twice. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Pleased to be joined by 19-year tour caddy Ted Scott. How are you today, Ted?
I'm doing well, man. This weather is a little bit iffy, but glad to be inside, you know?
Well, you got to spend a nice stay over in Augusta National. What was it like, especially on Sunday, as Tiger was making his charge? The gallery had to be electric.
Man, it was awesome. You know, Sunday at Augusta is always incredible, but Tiger making a charge, especially being in contention the last few majors, you know, I think people had the sense that maybe he can do this. You start having that belief again. And, you know, once it got tied up, it was kind of like, oh, boy, here we go. And all eyes were on him. You know, even though there was a big tournament going on, several guys had a chance to post, and, you know, that they weren't very close. It, obviously, if they would have made a birdie or two coming in, it would have been a nice playoff. But all eyes were on him, and it was just as loud as you can imagine. You know, if you remember the scene at East Lake at the Tour Championship, the madness of him winning that, you know, just kind of picture that, you know, in a major. It was incredible.
Ted, the man is going through four back surgeries, countless other injuries, right? The Achilles, his neck. How would you look at that rash of injuries and what he's done to come back from it? What's the most difficult thing physically he's had to overcome?
Well, golf is a difficult sport on your body. You know, it's a lot of twisting and torquing. You know, I think, I'm not sure if our bodies are meant to turn like that, and especially because we tend to do it one-sided. You know, we don't swing a backhand and a forehand or whatever, so... I think, you know, naturally it's hard on your body, but then when you go at the speed at which he goes at the ball and to have all the surgeries and everything, it's kind of unfathomable, one, that he can swing, but two, that he can even swing that fast still. So his doctors must be world-class, and obviously Tiger Woods has a work ethic like nobody else, you know.
Talking shop with Ted Scott on 103.7 The Game, 19-year tour caddy, currently on the bag for Bubba Watson. And I got a few questions on Bubba momentarily, but one more on Tiger. From your vantage point, all right, so remove all of us in the broadcasting journalism world. Forget about the patrons. From your vantage point, what difference does Tiger being competitive and winning again make to the sport and to the PGA?
Oh, that's a massive difference. I mean, you know, from the time he came on the scene till now, you know, he's brought golf to the cool kids. You know, you got people like, you know, I think even Brooks Koepka, Dustin Johnson's of the world, those are great athletes who might not have played golf, but you know, you're starting to see more and more really athletic kids starting to play the game of golf, and a lot of you know, athletes who retire, you know, professional athletes who retire come to the game of golf because it's something you can play your whole lifetime. So it's huge, you know, the fact that when he's in contention, I mean, the ratings are known to go up, you know, regardless of what people say, and everybody wants to know, can he do it again? Is it possible? You know, the greatness, the madness, the excitement that he brought to the game, you know, in the early 2000s to mid-2000s, you know, if he can get that back going a few times, you know, we all want to experience that again, because honestly, I believe each person just can't believe the stuff that he does. You know, we can't believe the confidence. He has the ability to somehow dig deep inside of him in a place that most of us can't even fathom getting to, and to pull out, you know, shots when everything's on the line. And to me, that's just what makes it so exciting to watch him.
How has Bubba Watson, your guy, won that tournament twice? I understand that it's his home course. I understand there's a lot of familiarity, but what are the things that he does best, his skill set, that translates to Augusta National?
Well, one, the creativity. You know, it's a place where you can hit all kinds of different golf shots, so it gives Bubba options. Two, you know, you really need to curve the ball to hit the ball well off the tee and into some of the greens, you know, whether to hold it against the slope or you can use the slope to run it down to the pin. So those are, you know, first of all, that's right up Bubba's alley. And then I would say second, the biggest thing is Bubba loves fast greens. I mean, he absolutely loves them. He's a die putter. You know, Nicklaus was a die putter. He won six of them. So, you know, he loves to just barely hit the ball and have it trickle down to the hole. And he sees that kind of, curve and putting and speed. So that's really to his advantage. And then the final thing would be Bubba loves the eye-popping colors that show up. Like, he loves desert golf because it's very green and then the desert's so brown, so it's very easy for him to see where the target is. You know, and you go to Augusta and you have the dark brown pine straw and the bright green grass and the super white sand, and just the contrast and the colors and everything just pop out to him, the artist. So it just brings out his creativity and makes him feel alive. And I think he feels real connected to what he's doing out there. And it's interesting because the 10th tee, which slices the most right to left for him, you would think that's an easy tee shot, but he actually doesn't really like it because he can't see the fairway. It's a blind tee shot. So, he likes to be able to see the landing zone. He likes to stick out, and then that kind of programs his body what to do. So I just think it's everything that he loves is right there in one bottle, you know.
Even with the early start Sunday, Bubba went 3-under in round 4 for the tournament. He tied for 12th at 8-under. How would the two of you evaluate that performance? I understand it's not winning. It's not the green jacket. But how did he perform over a 4-day run?
You know, we got off to a slow start. We had a tough day driving the ball the first round, and he fought hard to keep it at even, which is really good. And then the second day, didn't really get the ball in the hole quick enough, which is easy to do there. You know, if you can hit it 10 feet, but you have such a defensive putt, whereas if you're 10 feet on the other side of the hole, you can attack it. So he played much better the second day, still shot even par. And then, the weekend, the thing started rolling. And that eagle on 15 on Sunday, really got us over the edge and, got to 10 under for the week. And, we were charging it up the leaderboard quickly and, trying to birdie the last few and gave a few back, but it was awesome. You know, it's awesome to be right there with a chance and, look forward to next time. It's an honor to caddy there. You know, I look forward to it every year.
Another few moments talking with tour caddy Ted Scott on Twitter at JTedScott. All right, speaking of Twitter, Bubba took to Twitter and told Phil Mickelson, my man, it's in the arms, it's not in the calves if you're looking to hit the high bomb. So that was one of the funniest things I think that came out of the Masters was what Phil gave us driving in for the weekend. You got to give me some of the reaction there. Phil taking to Twitter, having a little bit of fun with Matt Kuchar, and then Bubba had to get in on the act.
Yeah, man, I think a lot of people really want to see the personality of these guys. And, sometimes they're not really allowed to be themselves. And, social media can be a mean place, as you know, where someone could be in grandma's basement and they can just type any kind of ugly statement they want. I'm really proud of Phil and Bubba and guys that get on there and make some fun videos and just kind of show the lighter side of who they are. Phil's a lot of fun. He likes to heckle people and cut up, and so does Bubba. So, it's right up their alley. And I think if people were nicer on Twitter, you'd see a whole lot more of that from the tour pros,
I get the sense, look, from 1,000 feet, Ted, that Phil is coming out of his shell, or at least maybe it's the first time over the last 3 to 4 years that we're seeing it as a mass public. I mean, you've seen him behind closed doors for years. Has he always been this guy, or is he a little more gregarious now?
No, he's always been that guy. He likes to cut up. But like I said, when you're a top celebrity, I think sometimes you have to be guarded, because you can joke around for the wrong thing and offend somebody. And in today's world, that can go a long way against you and against, your sponsors or whatever. So, get his personality out there and let people experience who he is. And, those are probably, just be yourself and say something silly and people eat it up, man. It's a lot of fun.
Hey, Ted, while we have another moment or two, I know that the Zurich Classic coming up, not this weekend, but next in New Orleans. Will Bubba be participating, number one? And number two, what would you tell our listeners that have never been out to the Zurich that event is all about?
Yeah, we're definitely playing. We're playing with J.D. Holmes. We played with him a couple years ago and had a top 10, and we're looking forward to it. We were his President's Cup team partner before in Seoul, Korea, so it'll be a lot of fun watching two guys that can smash it. But it's a really cool event. One, the New Orleans tournament, the people that run it, they're great. They have that southern hospitality that we like, and everybody feels welcome. And they have at the winning putt, they have the band come out, the marching band come out and play Mardi Gras music. So it's a lot of fun. But the coolest part about the event is it's a team tournament on the PGA Tour, and it's alternate shot one day, and then it's best ball another day, and then it alternates again doing the same thing on the weekend. So it's just a totally different format. something that people don't get to see, and it's really fun to see two guys pair up and try to beat the rest of the twosomes out there in that kind of format. So, I think everybody loves it, and it's growing in attention. You're starting to get more and more top players that want to play in it because it's a lot of fun, and it's a break from the hustle and bustle of, you know, the lonely deal that we have out there, you know, battling against 144 guys every week.
Ted, this is the second time we've had the pleasure of bringing you on the show. Really do appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this. For our listeners that want to keep up with you, where can they follow you? Check out on the website. I know you're a tour caddy coach as well, so if they want to connect with you, how can they do that?
Yeah, I post stuff on Instagram, you know, some coaching stuff and some crazy videos at JTedScott, and also on Twitter at JTedScott. So that'd be an easy way to follow me and see what kind of stuff I got going on. But if you follow Bubba, you'll probably find out where I'm at. That's probably the easiest way.
Easy enough. Brother, stay dry out there. Thanks again for the time today.
All right, man. Talk to you later. Thanks.
Ted Scott, 19-year tour caddy. He has seen some things. Glad that he shared some with us today. We got to hit a quick break. When we return, we're going to switch it over to LSU baseball. 8 o'clock, first pitch tonight. Mikhail Hilliard will get the pill first. We'll ask Gunn Palmer what he thinks about it all. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. Coming right back to the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
Stanley Cup champion Capitals up 2-1 in that series.
When it comes to purple and gold baseball, Hunt Palmer is dialed in. Now, back to the Tap Room, where Hunt schools Ben on Maneri's Men on 103.7 The Game.
Right back out to the Tap Room, River Ranch. You're dialed into Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. And, yeah, look, as 4:34 p.m. goes, pretty packed house so far. We'll have Rhythms on the River, a couple of stones throws away from here at 6 o'clock, Chubby Carrier playing, and then right back here, 8 to 11, Jones and Hollers. Free music on this Holy Thursday, right? I think there's just a few people off work, off school tomorrow. They're joining us. You should, too. Right about now, it's time to get on the Ardco Equipment Hotline. To Baton Rouge we go. It's time to talk with Hunt Palmer, podcast guru, 1045ESPN.com. You can listen to him, Charlie Hanner Group. It's called Outside the Box. Hunt, how are you today?
I'm good, Ben. How's everything in Lafayette?
It's raining like cats and dogs. We got some areas where it's flooding. I can't imagine it's too much different in Baton Rouge, right?
No, brutal in Baton Rouge, but it's supposed to move out of here 6 o'clock or so, and hopefully they can get this thing started at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock, the new first pitch time, and Mikhail Hilliard, within the last hour, announced as the starting pitcher tonight. Also interesting to me, Hunt, the idea that Zach Hess is a possibility out of the bullpen. Maybe tonight, maybe later in this three-game set. Your reaction to both of those bits of news?
I think Hilliard is the obvious choice. I mean, he threw 100 pitches last week, and they didn't use him in the midweek. I think that Palmieri was kind of targeting this all along. You don't really have another great option. He's proven he can do it in his young career, and I think he's the guy. In terms of Hess out of the bullpen, I just can't wait when that presents itself and Hess goes out there and strikes out two in a perfect inning, and everybody in Baton Rouge throws their hands up and says, see, he's a closer. That's what he should have been all along. That seems inevitable, but I'm just my main concern really is that Zach Hess is healthy, and you just can't bring him back too early. He needs to feel 100%, and if he doesn't feel 100% this weekend, he needs to sit. But if the trainers say he's ready to go, he can get that thing stretched out and loose. You know, you may need him at some point in a tight game because they're all big weekends from here on out.
Trent Vintmeyer having a rough outing, to say the least, in Metairie a few nights ago. It's not good for his psyche. I'm sure he'll bounce back, but as far as what it does to this weekend coming out of the pen, how does it affect the options that Alan Dunn will have?
Well, the first homer he gave up was a bad pitch. It was up and in, and the kid ran it out. The second home run was not that bad a pitch. It was down below the knees, and it's just a great swing, and that happens sometimes. You get a really good hitter in the box, and you make a pitch, and he does what he does. He's a good hitter, so you know, the box score is ugly for Vintmeyer from that game, but I thought one of those pitches wasn't all that bad. So he'll still be a guy that you turn to. I mean, there are very few pitchers who go through the season and don't have a bad outing. It just happens every once in a while. You got to get back on the horse and throw the ball well, and he's done that for 2 months now. I would expect him to come in to a big spot at some point this weekend.
Okay, so you do believe he'll be available. He didn't throw too much to where that's out the window?
I mean, I think tonight maybe iffy, but definitely for Friday and Saturday, I think this might be ready.
We'll continue talking LSU baseball with our resident expert, Hunt Palmer. He's on Twitter, at HuntPalmer88. Anything else that you've gleaned from Paul Maneri and the injury updates that have been coming along? Are they going to be able to get some of their normal bats back, Chris Reed, Zach Watson? And if not, who does that put the onus on for this big series?
It sounds like Reed is pretty close. Both Chris Reed and Zach Watson took live BP yesterday off Lewis Coleman, who's in Baton Rouge and was throwing to him. And neither reported anything significantly wrong. I think Chris Reed's got a better chance to play, which helps because you're kind of short infielders. Takamo kind of gives you a stable force in the outfield. You don't really have that guy on the infield to plug and play. So we'll see. I think Watson is a little bit more iffy. It's possible he could go, but they may hold him one more game and just let DiGiacomo go out there and play. But make no mistake, the team that LSU put out there on Sunday in Missouri and on Tuesday against ULL is not good enough to compete in the SEC. That's just not enough talent on the field. So they got to get these guys back healthy, and hopefully that starts tonight.
I think the common fan, Hunt, is going to look at that under 500 SEC record for Florida and come to the conclusion, okay, they're not the group that we're used to. What would you say about the team that is coming to Baton Rouge and maybe where they're strongest?
That's correct. This is not one of those powerhouse Florida teams. It's almost like there are no infallible programs, and every once in a while you have a down year. It's almost like that happens every once in a while, not just in Baton Rouge. It's amazing how that works out. But, yeah, this team does not have Jackson Coar and Alex Fiedo and Brady Singer and Logan Storr and Hudson Randall and Brian Jordan. I mean, these elite, A.J. Puck's another one, these first 10 pick in the draft pitchers that Florida just seems to churn through constantly. They just don't have them this year. And so their SEC ERA, I believe, is last. You'll see Tommy Mace tonight, who has kind of been mediocre this year. His ERA in SEC plays over 4. You'll see Leftwich in game 2, who has given up 11 runs in 10 SEC innings. You'll see Scott on Saturday, who's given up 6 runs in both of his last 2 starts. I mean, it's a Florida staff that gave up 40 runs in a weekend to Ole Miss and got swept. Vanderbilt scorched them as well. They start 4 freshmen in their everyday lineup. They're hitting a little bit more now, as you would expect freshmen grow up and get better, and there's talent there. But this is not one of those Florida teams that you expect to run to Omaha and make a deep run. It's just not right now. And if you take away playing 3 games against Alabama and Gainesville, who's the worst team in the West, you've got a team that's 3-9 in the league. So it's a rebuild year for Kevin O'Sullivan and Gainesville.
You've spent a good bit of time around Paul Maneri, and so I'll ask you this question because, like I said, of that familiarity, how trying do you think this season has been for that man personally? And I will never suggest he's lost 1 ounce of focus because I don't think that he has, but you consider the death of his father, the idea that an athletic director is coming and going now. What do you think this year has been like for that man?
It's been hard for him, I'm certain. It's just he was so close to his dad. And that's just that's something you got to deal with. You can't turn the page that quickly on that. It's just going to take time. It's going to take him a very long time. But you know, I think he's at peace with that, and he's continued to coach. And you know, obviously didn't even miss a game the day he died. It's just the way he works. So yeah, that's going to be very difficult off the field for sure. And then on the field, it's just been brutal. They can't get their team healthy. They can't get their arms healthy. The position players going down one by one. It's just been almost too much to handle, but they've stayed afloat, and they're still 1 game out of first place in the SEC West, and they hold the tiebreaker. And you know, Mississippi State and A&M have brutal schedules coming up, where LSU's got Florida this week, who's a little bit down, and Alabama's coming up. And you know, it's they're not in a bad spot, but they've got to get healthy because, like I said, trotting out what they had the last 2 games, you're not just not going to win very often.
Hunt, the weather's crappy everywhere in South Louisiana. We talked about that, but I have to imagine, are there just people in Baton Rouge doing slip-and-slide parties right now, everything that's happened to the athletic director in the last 24 hours?
The approval rating on that hire is 100%, I think. It is, it's something. You know, obviously Scott Woodward is a really respected guy. He's done a tremendous job in Washington, building that stadium and getting Chris Peterson to lead Boise State and going to College Station and landing a national championship coach from a Power 5 program for football and getting Buzz Williams to be the coach in basketball and oversaw that huge fundraising campaign in College Station as well. So the fact that he's obviously a guy who loves LSU, he's done a great job. And I just think the process that this was so quickly done, so decisively done, and so effectively done is a little bit foreign to LSU fans at this point based on the last 4 or 5 years. And so, yeah, I think that there are a lot of people that are pretty excited right now.
Yeah, the word is refreshing. And look, I'll leave you with this thought because it occurred to me yesterday. Buzz Williams had happened to him what transpires with so many college student athletes when they sign the letter of intent and then the coach leaves like 3 weeks later. I don't think I've ever seen that with the head coach, though, before. It's really kind of odd.
Yeah, you never know the timing on these things. And for me, I think the timing for LSU is just, okay, we found a guy that we like. Let's go. You know, because the athletic director doesn't really have a season. I mean, I guess you could call the school year a season, but coaches get fired in the middle of a bad season or right after a bad season. That's how that usually works. The athletic directors, it's a little bit more fluid. You never know when exactly these type of things are coming. But yeah, it's not a great feeling for Buzz Williams because obviously the next guy is going to know that that's not my guy. But he's a great coach and he's done a great job. And I think if I'm an A&M fan, the work Scott Woodward did over the last few years with football and basketball, I feel pretty good about.
He is Hunt Palmer. His guy Tiger Woods won the Masters last week. LSU just hired Scott Woodward. And the Cubs are only one game out of 500. They're not terrible. What I'm telling you is his life is pretty good these days. Hunt, thanks for doing this, man.
I appreciate it, Ben. If I could just get the Cubs to play the Marlins more often, I'd be in good shape.
Wouldn't we all? Wouldn't that be nice? Astros get the beat up on punching bag little brother Texas Rangers this weekend. Isn't that fun to say? Didn't used to be that way at all. But Hunt's got just about everything going in the direction that he would like. I got to move into the direction of our final break in hour number one. Don't forget Jeff Horchek sitting in live 5 until 5:30. Your best opportunity to get a call in on today's show, it's on the other side of this break. I gave you everything I know that I think on Scott Woodward to LSU, how it happened, and what's next. You can respond to it. 706-0111. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're still live, hanging out, and having a great time at the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Stay it dry inside the Taproom River Ranch. You got to come and join us. You'll have a lot of friends when you get here. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports right back in on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love here. We got the famous Clint D inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing, and he can take your phone calls. In fact, this might be one of the last remaining segments where we will definitely be wide open. A lot of planned content, a lot of great guests. Call us while you can. 706-0111. LSU has a new director of athletics. That was made official today by the university. Scott Woodward, an alum, a Baton Rouge native, and formerly of Texas A&M. And I'll touch on that for a few moments. This wasn't done to hurt Texas A&M, but I'm sure it's received quite well that it does. There just can't be any doubt about that. And I thought that, surprise, surprise, Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated, SI.com, I thought he did an outstanding job of listing the coaching, AD, and otherwise personnel war that continues to be waged between the Tigers and the Aggies. And think about all the bricks in the wall at this point, right? John Chavis, Dave Aranda. You had coaches that switched places. Bradley Del Pivito, Damian Craig. Now, obviously, this has the chance to be one of the biggest hits. Taking away the athletics director, right? I know that guy. Woodward, making $900,000 a year for A&M, doesn't make as much as some of these coordinators, like Aranda at $2.5 million, but that's only one barometer financially. In terms of an impact, it's hard to aim a lot higher than AD when trying to impact an athletic program. And so when these two get together, seem to be a lot of fireworks. A whole lot more often than not, at least on the gridiron, LSU's been winning these games. But some of the things happening in kind of the sports business arena, there's been back and forth. There's been punch back. But this is a blow that you would think impacts Texas A&M. Now, that said, no doubt about it, that becomes an extremely coveted job in College Station. Whereas many wondered if LSU would have a national AD search ensue. Now you can wonder that about A&M, and let me promise you, the answer is yes. It'll be national in scope. Do they have their own local ace in the hole? Do they have a version of Woodward that they want to bring in? Don't really know. Don't particularly care. Not all that privy to it. But I think they'll have their pick of the litter when it comes to up-and-comers, when it comes to established ADs, and some of the biggest names from around college athletics. So interesting. LSU, A&M, it's a battle everywhere. And the latest round, certainly, will go to LSU. But I'll reiterate, this guy could have been at Florida, Alabama, Washington, and they'd have still wanted him because he's their guy. He's the one that they targeted. He's the one that has internal institutional knowledge. You may think of that as knowing where all the bodies are buried, but I think of it maybe slightly differently. I think of it as, okay, this guy knows the power players. He's not going to come in. And just for example, from a head coaching standpoint, I think it took quite a bit of adjustment for Trent Johnson once upon a time to come in and get used to Collis Temple Jr. It's just a fact. It did. I wrote a whole story on it when I was in Tiger Rag magazine. I think it took quite some time for Joe Oliva, an outsider, to come in and try to get used to a board of supervisors that has its hands in the cookie jar. They got their ladle in the gumbo. But this guy comes in, and perhaps his ladle will be the biggest. Perhaps his voice will be heard the loudest. At least that's what I've been told has been arranged behind closed doors. And hallelujah, if needed. You can't have that many cooks in the kitchen. And as you can tell, I got all the metaphors you need today. But it's true. This guy needs to come in, and Woodward needs to be able to run his own show. And from what I've been told, he'll be able to. So it's nice to say, well, he just wanted to come home. It's nice to think LSU can compete with A&M when it comes to compensation for somebody in this position. But I'm not sure one deserves as much credence as it's getting, and I'm not sure that the other was really that big of a factor. A&M would always win a bidding war with LSU. When it comes down to dollars and cents, they just have the endowment. They've got the backing. It's not that LSU doesn't. But there are levels to things. Woodward, I believe, is coming back in large part because he is going to have that autonomy that position so covets. And as I told you at the beginning of the show, I think everybody's going to be in line. Everyone will be lockstep here. From the governor on down. And that's not an exaggeration. That's not embellishment. It's just true. It's how this state works. John Bel Edwards wants to be reelected in 2019. Sure is nice to have the public endorsement, the financial contributions from somebody like Richard Lipsey. So just connect the dots. This stuff ain't rocket science. It's very much Louisiana sports. You may say Louisiana politics. I'll remind you, they're one and the same. Just don't ever forget that. It's one in the same. And so yesterday, I told you, was a very good day for LSU. I didn't mind adding the caveat, but they better let this man do his job and get the hell out of his way. Today, I'm here to tell you, I believe that's going to happen. And so the news is nothing but good. Skies are nothing but blue, metaphorically, even though they are awfully gray right now. We got plenty of program coming at you on the other side of this hour break. We'll do our best for Clint to get you some weather updates, anything from a traffic standpoint you need to know as well. We'll be dedicated to that, keeping you safe out there. And we got some great guests that are coming at you. In fact, our man Jeff Horchek just arrived. Trooper is here as well, and with this weather, he fits his name, and he's living up to the billing. So we got a lot to discuss. Probably be Pels and Saints heavy with Jeff Horchek. We've now got a schedule, the games he's most looking forward to. David Griffin officially announced, floated the idea that Anthony Davis may not be gone pecan. Nah, I'm not buying it. We'll see if Jeff is. And then we have some of our best interviews, some of the week that was, to throw at you. Again, you're just joining us. You expected LSU baseball at 6, pregame show at 5:30. Push everything back 2 hours. First pitch is now at 8 o'clock. Mikhail Hilliard will get the start for Paul Maneri and Alan Dunn. The pregame show is at 7:30. All right, CD, we packed a lot into hour number one, but I did still save room for one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Boys. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Drama. Even with the Golden State Warriors, there's got to be a little of that along the way in these playoffs, right? We all expect the coronation. Mike D'Antoni says his Rockets are as good as anybody. The Celtics are starting to flex again in the East, and I'm just not buying it. I don't think it matters. The Warriors are going to win, but with Kevin Durant speaking his mind, Boogie Cousins getting injured, well, they know how to keep it interesting, and they know how to provide and inject just a little bit of drama, as we always thought there might be. That's the final word of this hour. It's brought to you by the Village Station. They're your final stop to fill up your stomach and tank as you head home on Maurice Avenue. We're one third of the way home ourselves. Coming back with Jeff Horchek at the Tap Room River Ranch. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. A packed Taproom River Ranch, our home, on this wet Thursday. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're staying dry here at the Taproom on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love going to be joined momentarily by Jeff Horchek of the award-winning PASPOT 2 KLFY TV 10, and the famous Glenn D rounds out our trio inside the 237 Roof Studios presented by Lafayette Roofing. All right, Jeff, it's 5:03 p.m., and this place feels like it's 8:03. There might just be a few folks that don't have to work tomorrow. That's a possibility.
Tell you, it sure looks like it, Ben. There's a really nice crowd in here. Usually when I come in to meet you around 5, there's not nearly this many people, but they're packed in tonight. I wonder if the weather has anything to do with that. You know, they figure, hey, we'll drink away our sorrows or what?
I do know this, and for those just tuning in, Rhythms on the River, it's on tonight. It's at 6 p.m. They pushed it back just a touch. Chubby Carrier's going to be playing. But if you want to come to the Tap Room, they've always got live music, 8 to 11, Jones and Hollers. A little soulful sound in here tonight, Jeff. And look, Trooper made the trip as well.
He did.
Is he a wet weather dog? Does he cooperate with the elements?
No, he's not a big wet weather guy. You know, when it rains, I always say, Troop, it's time to go to the bathroom. You got to go out. He'll go out, but he comes right back in. He's been raised in a house, so he's not really an outdoor dog, although he likes to go out when the weather's nice, but not a big fan of the rain.
Has he ever been thrown into a body of water before? Because I've got my own story. How about Trooper?
He has. I've taken him to the beach. I took him to Florida. He wasn't, and a buddy of mine's house where we stayed, they have a pool. He wasn't a big fan of the pool, but when we took him to the beach, he liked it because he could actually walk in to the water, you know, at chest level, whatever level he wanted. So he seemed he did it on his own. So he seemed to be more of a beach dog than a pool dog. So he has beach bum potential, you know? I was thinking, Ben, this is what I was thinking the other day. I had gone to Gulf Perito Beach with my family, and we spent a couple nights in a condo, and I said, Dad, I said, you know, I could see myself buying a little hot dog stand where I go and get a permit where I on the summertime I go roam the beach, sell hot dogs, have Trooper tied onto me,
yes,
flip him a biscuit here and there, and we sell hot dogs on the beach, you know, for a few hours, and that's how we retire. I could see it, man. I could see it.
about 10 or 12 years ago, I had a dog that was mostly black mouth cur with a little bit of lab in him. Let me tell you that Roscoe literally had webbed paws, right?
I believe it.
Had to assume this dog would cooperate with water. Like, dude, you were meant to be in the water.
Yeah.
Threw him in one time. He almost disowned me that day. I mean, paddled out like he was about to die on me and wouldn't look at me for like a week. Wouldn't even look at me. So anybody who's done that litmus test with their dog, it can backfire.
It can. I mean, it's just like anybody else. You know, they don't expect it. It catches them off guard. And Trooper has some lab in him. I believe he's a lab healer mix. We think he's a red healer mix with lab. So he's got lab in him, and labs are usually water dogs. They tend to like water. But like I said, he's been raised in a house, so he's not been, you know, running around a lake or jumping in a pool a lot. But he does like water. I think it's at his – when he wants to go in, he'll go in. That's why the beach was perfect, because he was able to kind of walk in to whatever level of water he wanted, whereas a pool, you just kind of throw him in. So I think he could live on the beach with me. We could do it.
Ben Love, joined by Jeff Horchek at the Taproom River Ranch. I will make the smooth transition from dogs that do and don't swim to the Saints schedule. It was officially released yesterday. How about the four right out of the gate? Monday Night Football, the week after Labor Day against the Houston Texans, that's home. Then you're on the road at the L.A. Rams, won the NFC last year. Then at the Seattle Seahawks playoff team last year. Then home, week four, Sunday Night Football versus the Dallas Cowboys. Your take, the star power, the level of difficulty, all of it.
Tell you what, it's an interesting schedule. They don't waste any time. I mean, you open up with the Texans, who are a playoff team. We know how good their defense is. And then you've got the Rams again, which, you know, the NFL was wanting that matchup to be put together early in the year. You got to go on the road. And then, yeah, Seattle, and Russell Wilson just signed a monster deal to stay five more years. So that's going to be a formidable opponent. Then you got the Cowboys on Sunday Night Football. What a sexy matchup. And they've got a game later in the year against the Colts, which is a primetime game
Monday
as well.
But
yeah, at home. So they've got a really good schedule. They got Thanksgiving night against the Falcons on the road. That's always a great matchup. So, yeah, it's a really exciting schedule. You got some different teams they'll play this year, some non-conference games against Jacksonville coming. Leonard Fournette will be coming to the Dome. Or, I'm sorry, they're at Jacksonville. And then you've got Arizona you play as well. And then the 49ers. You got a 49ers matchup in Tennessee. So you see some teams out of their conference they get to play. But I like the schedule. It's an interesting schedule. You never know how good teams are going to be. I mean, they're looking at everything from last year, trying to figure out, you know, usually when you have a good team, the next year your schedule is a little more difficult. But we don't know how good those teams are going to be. Nobody knows.
Two comments that I'll make. We'll take phone calls as well. We're going Saints schedule right now, 706-0111. Last year, the Saints got kind of screwed over with the Thursday nights, the Sunday, and they ended up playing, like, what, three games and something weird, like 17 days.
Yeah.
I love this year. If you look at it, weeks 10 through 12, leading into Thanksgiving in week 13, Saints are at home three straight, and they're all division games. Versus Atlanta, versus Tampa, versus Carolina. That's week 10 through 12 in the Dome. I love that stretch for the Saints. I've only got one real bone to pick with this schedule. They didn't have the stones to make the Rams-Saints game in the Superdome. Could you imagine that?
Yeah, I you're right. It would have been nice to see that game back in New Orleans because of how it ended last year. But, you know, that's one of those games, Ben, we're going to be talking about till we're old men in a nursing home somewhere. Hopefully not. But, you know, wherever we are when we're old men, we're going to be talking about that game and how they blew that call. That game is going to live forever. But you're right. I'm surprised that – my question to you is, do you think they didn't put it in New Orleans for a reason?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
They didn't want it to be relived and get ugly. They just wanted to be able to relive and generate some mojo.
Yeah.
You put that in New Orleans, you think the Browns fans at the Dog Pound throwing beers at people one time was a bad thing? You would have to do so many things from a security standpoint at that game. I don't think they wanted to risk it. Me, I'm trying to steer into the skid a little bit there because I think the NFL deserves it.
Well,
I think it's intentional.
Could they even have gotten officials to officiate that game? Because what officiating crew is going to want to go there and do that the year after? You know what I'm saying? You're like throwing us out to dry, you know, hanging us out to dry. I don't know if anybody wanted to. Yeah, so.
You know what? You're going to have to go to Mexico to find the guys that are used to being at Estadio Azteca, where literally they throw bags of piss at people. These guys aren't going to be scared of anything. We need to bring them to the Dome and let the Rams and the Saints play again. From what they've seen, they can handle that.
Tell you what, it's listen, officiating is not easy. We all know that. But that game, it still blows my mind on how that call was not made, as important as that game was. And I'm not one of these guys that hangs on to things, but it still blows my mind because I look at the schedule and I see that game. And that's all anybody's going to be talking about leading up to that game. They're not going to be talking about this year's Rams team, this year's Saints team, second week of the year. They're going to be talking about how they botched last year's game. So it is. And then the Rams got drummed in the Super Bowl.
Yep.
So,
you know, the other thing I'd say about that game, you could bet futures, right? You could bet on future records, odds of winning the Super Bowl. I wish that you could bet on a future-specific game. Now, what's always tough is you never know what's going to happen with injuries, and we're a world away. I get that. But I would love to throw money on the Saints to win that game right now. I mean, can you imagine the level of, as Les Miles would say, the want to win that game?
Oh, yeah. There's definitely some extra momentum or some incentive to win that game because, you know, if they take care of business in that first game against Houston, then you beat the Rams, you're off to a 2-0 start going to Seattle. That's huge. Then you got the Cowboys. That's another game you want to win because remember what Dallas did this year. So, I mean, those first four games are as sexy as they get.
I'm with you. And the fact that none of them will be played at noon is very interesting. I mean, they're all in some way, shape, or form, either at prime time or the late start.
Mm-hmm.
And if you play the late game and you're in the NFC, I mean, there are a lot of eyeballs on you in that time slot.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've seen, Ben, the last 3 to 4 to 5 years, the Saints have gotten a lot of prime time games because they have a sexy team. They have one of the best teams on paper in the NFL. They've got a lot of big-time star power on that team. And Sean Payton, love him or hate him, he's got star power to him. So the Saints are a team that are built for prime time, and people like to see them. And, of course, New Orleans is such a great football city, and they support their team, and they really get behind them. So it's not a surprise that the Saints get 3 to 4 nationally televised primetime games every year, and this year it's going to be no different. All four of these primetime games are really good. I mean, you got star power with the Saints, Texans, the Saints, Cowboys, Saints, Colts, and then Saints, Falcons, you know?
Three of those four have incredibly sexy quarterback matchups
yep.
as well. All due disrespect to the Houston Texans there. But look at the rest of them. Dallas, Breeze versus Dak. Atlanta, Breeze versus Matt Ryan. And then Indy, Breeze versus Andrew Luck. You don't have to go far to sell those.
No, and then, you know, week one, you got Deshaun Watson, who's one of the up-and-comers.
I can't believe I forgot about
him. No, that's okay.
I forgot he was the quarterback because he was injured a year and a half ago.
Yeah, but he's a young gun who's coming up. No, so, I mean, you're really looking. You're right. I mean, those are all four of those nationally televised games. You have sexy quarterback matchups. You got some young guys going against some veterans. And, you know, I guess you consider Matt Ryan now a veteran because he's been in the league. But Dak is still young. So is Deshaun. And then Andrew Luck is starting to come into, I guess, his prime years. But he lost a few because of that neck injury or the shoulder, I guess it was. But, yeah, I mean, those are really good matchups. And it's all about matchups when it comes to pitting those nationally televised games together. And the NFL does a good job of that. You got to give them credit. They know how to pick them.
Every day in the 5:30 segment, we throw shade. Mm-hmm. I might include myself there. I was thinking like Brock Osweiler, Tom Savage, and some also-rans. Some guy named Deshaun Watson. He's pretty darn good. All right, we're going to take our first break in hour number two. We'll return with Jeff Horchek of the award-winning Pospod 2 on KLFY TV 10. Got to talk Pels. Is it really possible for AD to come back? And what does Jeff think about this new VP of basketball operations in the Crescent City? This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, hanging out at a madhouse, the Tap Room River Ranch. Great crowd. And we'll be back at it on 103.7 The Game.
We're going back to our regular show.
All right, this is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 103.7thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 103.7 The Game.
Well, here we go. Back in. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, live from the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love joined by Jeff Horchek, and I think they caught us off air talking a little professional hockey there. I come on, and the Ted Nugent sound like it's been playing for a little while. So, look, we'll just bring it to the air. We're talking about Atlanta, and it'll come back up with Glenn as we throw shade in our next segment. But the poor Atlanta fan base, and I'm sure everybody listening will cry in their beer for them. But they got the Braves, and as dominant as they were in the 90s, early 2000s, only got over the hump one time. Falcons, well, we kind of all get that. 28-3 is the highlight. The Hawks, you know, I mean, since Dominique, really a know-nothing franchise.
Pete Maravich, I'm
that's
sorry.
Right.
I'm sorry.
And right before we came on air, Clint might have actually sniped us when we were getting on air. Well, we're talking about the Thrashers,
yeah.
NHL franchise that no longer exists. And so, you know, if you're living in Atlanta, you just got to find something else to do, or at least don't get too invested.
It's, we were just talking about how tough it is to be a pro Atlanta sports fan because they, you know, the Falcons have blew it in the Super Bowl, and then, like you said, they just haven't had a lot of, they haven't been able to get over the hump in their major professional teams. They won one World Series in the 90s, I believe.
96.
Yeah, when they had a great, their farm system was phenomenal back then, but they only got one World Series out of that, which I think was a disappointment considering how much talent they ran through that organization in a 10 to 12 year span. You know, it's got to be tough to be a Falcon fan or a Brave fan or a Hawks fan. But like you said, most of the people that live in Atlanta are transplants. They're not diehard locals. So
correct.
I don't know how connected they are to those teams. They're only connected when they're winning, you know?
The definition of bandwagon fans. And
yeah.
I've explored that space on the show before. All right, before we run out of time, I want to dedicate some of our space to the New Orleans Pelicans.
Mm-hmm.
David Griffin officially introduced yesterday. Everybody understands what he did for Cleveland when LeBron was coming in out of the turnstile. But he left an impression that it's not completely done yet with AD.
Mm-hmm.
That may be something that he just has to say. Do you believe that there's a chance in hell that Anthony Davis wears a Pels uniform again?
I don't really think there's a chance because even if there was, he kind of burned a lot of the bridges toward the end too. So it's going to be really hard for the fans to go, oh, yeah, sure, you want to come back now? I don't see it happening. You never know the way the landscape of the NBA is right now because, man, talk about a ship sinking. The Lakers organization right now is in deep trouble. I hear that both of the candidates they're interested in as head coach, they may not get either one of them because Lou and Monty Williams, their sources are telling them don't even touch that because
LeBron.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so they're having an issue getting a coach there now, and you wonder what the Pelicans.
I can tell you're broken up about it.
Yeah, I'm really hurt. I keep thinking, well, you get what you, that's your fault, dude. You created that issue, you had to lay in the bed you made. But the Pelicans are in a different situation because they have the ability to start over, and if they get the right trade for AD, move on. I think AD's done in New Orleans. I think no matter what David Griffin says, I think that they're moving on, and they're going to try to get the best deal they can for him and then go from there. Hopefully, you know, they get in the mix to get that lottery. If they get the number one pick, then you really have a lot more leverage. But even if you don't, you start over with a young team, and you just clean house. You get a new coach. You're just going to clean house, new basketball operations head, and you go from there. And I think that's probably the best thing for this organization at this time because AD mentally doesn't want to be here. And that just – he's moved on. Now, I don't know where he's going to end up. What do you think still – where do you think he's going to end up? We talked the last few weeks, Ben. The way he exited New Orleans was not good for his future. I think he made some bad decisions on setting himself up for other jobs because don't kid yourself – other organizations are looking at how he's handling this.
100%.
And that's not – so that means to me that you're probably going to have teams that are going to back out of him. He still may end up in L.A. He still could end up there possibly.
I don't think it'll happen right away.
Yeah.
I think that Boston is the best situation for the Pelicans in terms of a trade partner mm-hmm. or what they have to offer. I think the New York Knicks make the most sense for Anthony Davis.
Yeah.
Knowing what they're about to attract and the idea – that you maybe have fertile grounds to recruit Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant.
Right.
That is one hell of a big three that they may be able to put together. So I'm sure AD would prefer that, but I don't think anything is up to him or Rich Paul at this point.
Yeah.
The Pelicans have control over the next year of what happens with him. I'm sure they would prefer Danny Ainge and the Celtics. We'll see if that gets done.
Yeah, it was botched from every side, and it's unfortunate, but it is what it is. Now you move on. So I think the Pelicans are moving on. They realize they can start fresh with new head. And, you know, go get some young guys that want to be there or hungry to be in the league and start over. And I think that's probably the mode they're going to go in because, you know, sometimes, you know, when that door closes, it's time it closes for a reason. And I think the door on Anthony Davis in New Orleans clearly closed. Now, he had a lot to do with that as well. But it's time to move on, man. You can't really they put their whole franchise on his back. You see what it got him. Not much. So move on, you know.
Chopping it up, talking Pels with Jeff Horchek. You want to join us? Be our guest, 706-0111. We stay with the Pels for another beat or two. Your general impressions of David Griffin and what you hope he brings to this franchise.
Well, I mean, you know, he had success in Cleveland, and he seemed like he did a good job there. We'll see. I mean, you just never know with these type of situations. You never fully know how things are going to work out. Sometimes you just got to get lucky. When it comes to player personnel and some of the moves that they're going to have to make, they're going to have to get lucky on some draft picks. And the question is, can you attract some decent free agents to New Orleans? I don't know right now. You know, I'm starting to wonder if you just got to rebuild with a young team, hope that you get a stud early in the draft, and then you can build from there. I know that they would love to get that number one pick, because then you have the option of drafting whoever you want. But we'll see. There's a lot of different ways to build an NBA team. You know?
I'd love two or three for what it's worth, because
yeah,
it seems a understandably bygone conclusion that Zion Williamson would go one. Ja Morant would look phenomenal.
Yeah.
In a Pels uniform, and R.J. Barrett from Duke would as well. You give me two or three, I'm cutting cartwheels. You give them four or five, they could still make some really good chicken salad out of you-know-what.
Oh, yeah.
But if you give them six through nine, maybe ten, I'd almost rather shop that pick out and
yeah,
use that with AD to go fetch unbelievable players and future first-rounders.
Yeah, you're right. I think, you know, in basketball, you have – you only have two rounds. It's much different than the NFL. So you have it's very important that you get in that top five, really, versus football. You have many more opportunities to get good players. You don't have to be in the top five to land star players, you know, potential Hall of Fame players. But basketball, it's a little different. Usually you got to get in that top five to really get a instant impact player. And they need a young instant impact player or two right now.
Other difference that I would suggest, I haven't run the numbers on this, but my gut tells me there are more NFL teams that hit on fourth, fifth, sixth, occasionally even seventh round picks. I just got to be honest. There aren't a whole lot of second round picks that really stick and make it. There are the few. There are the Draymond Greens out there. There just aren't a lot of those.
Manu
guys.
Ginobili, yeah.
That's right.
There's not a lot. There's a few, but you're right. Very few teams, you know, have superstar players that they get in the second round. Every once in a while, once in a blue moon, but mainly, you know, you got to get a drafted guy super high to get a. And it's different with football.
So let's finish here. We started with Saints' schedule after talking about dogs and whether they like to swim or not. We'll end with the Saints.
Okay.
You reminded me. It's been so just manic with LSU, the athletic department there, Tiger winning the Masters. Completely off my radar until you jog my memory that a week from tonight is the first round of the NFL draft.
I know.
Saints aren't currently scheduled to pick there. Do you think that changes? And then in general for the draft, what are you hopeful for?
Well, I kind of think, Ben, they may make a trade or two to try to get more picks. You know, they seem to do the unexpected, and they don't have many picks. I believe that, what do they have? I think they have maybe three picks this year right now. So that's not a lot of picks. They don't have a first rounder. They traded that away. So they don't have a lot to work with in the draft. It makes sense that if they made a trade, they could pick up another couple picks or maybe trade down with one of the picks they have to pick up more picks. Don't be surprised if that happens. This is a draft that, you know, is a deep tight end draft. I know they just signed the big tight end out of Oakland, but they need tight ends. They still need more depth on the defensive line, I think, because you're not going to have Shelton Rankins early on because of his injury. So there's still some spots you could fill, get some depth, and maybe get a starter or two out of this draft. And I would be surprised they make a trade, but we'll see. I don't know what they're thinking, and that's the way they like it. They don't want anybody to know what they're thinking.
As we come down the stretch, partner, you know we enjoy having you and Trooper here. What's on tap for the both of you for this Easter weekend?
We're just going to relax, enjoy the weather. It's supposed to be great weather this weekend. Go to church on Sunday morning, and probably just enjoy a real relaxed weekend. So nothing too spectacular. We try to just lay low on the weekends, you know, and like I said, the weather is supposed to be really, really nice this week. And maybe I'll take Trooper on an Easter egg hunt. Who knows?
If you could find a way to get all of your meteorologists to ensure great weather, not just Easter weekend, but the next weekend for Festival, it would be much appreciated. Signed, Lafayette.
Absolutely. That's what we're hoping for. Festival International is coming up. Should be fun, but we got to get some good weather.
I love it.
It was fun. Thanks so much, man.
It always is. Jeff Orchek comes in. And he brings some of that award-winning flavor. Pospot, too. You know, one time in the next couple of weeks, we'll have to get me, you, and Gerald.
Yes.
Want to set it up on a tee and kind of back away a little bit and watch you two smash it. That would be a lot of fun.
We can fill the time for you. That's not a problem. If you need someone to fill time, that'll happen.
I know a thing or two about filibustering. So three of us together might just be fun radio. I do want to thank Jeff Orchek once again. We're halfway through hour number two. When we return, time to throw a little shade and me forgetting that Houston has a good quarterback. And Deshaun Watson, yeah, that might come up. The Atlanta sports city will also be on the docket. Don't go anywhere. We got that coming up for you. Plus, we're going to run back one of my favorite interviews, not only this week, but in a long time, The Riot. Two-time World Series champ, one-time College World Series champ, Ryan Terrio, joined us live from the Shrine on Airline Tuesday. You'll get that back in your life at the end of this hour. Bumper to Bumper Sports, check it out for a moment, but then right back in to the Taproom River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield,
but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back in. It's the part of the day. It's the part of hour number two that we know you look forward to. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. And before we issue our daily reminder, I got to tell you this. The tap room is absolutely jumping right now. Serious. 5:30, and part of the reason, I know, is because they pushed Rhythms on the River back. Chubby Carrier will still be playing at 6 p.m., but they pushed it back. People have an opportunity to take advantage of some of the deals here. I don't blame them one iota, but I'll remind you of this as well. Jones and Hollers are playing here 8 until 11. And yes, that actually is two people. It's not like Steely. Well, I guess it is like Steely Dan. Yeah, okay. You know what I mean. They're going to be playing soul music 8 until 11. There's no cover charge. It'll be a whole lot of fun. All right, CD. Now I can issue that daily reminder that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Go to the website, patiocenter.com. Check out the retractable shades and screens, the standing sea metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust in their professional installers. You can trust them inside your home and to beautify life outside your home. Alex will be the one to put up your shades and awnings while Todd mans the installation of your patio covers in those gorgeous, customizable screen rooms. Collectively, the team at Patio Center, they're ready to up your patio game and do it before the next LSU, UL, or Saints football game. All it takes to start is a trip to patiocenter.com. The kings of customization, it's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at patiocenter.com.
I think today's Throwing Shade, it is... Sorry.
Nope, go ahead, brother. You got it.
Okay, cool. Like I said, I got to throw shade at the Atlanta Falcons. What's going on over there? Because they released their schedule. First off, I'm throwing shade at the fact they wound up using Game of Thrones as the inspiration for their schedule reveal video, which is always cool to just see all the schedule videos that come out. But I think the biggest brunt of shade has to be thrown at the fact that whenever the Saints are going to be heading to Mercedes-Benz Stadium on November 28th for that Thanksgiving night game, you'll notice that a loose ram winds up taking out one of the Saints fans as they're making their way down to the field, down to the stadium to watch this big ball game go down. And then a referee quickly runs in to rule the play incomplete. And, of course, that's a nod to what happened in that NFC title game between the Saints and the Rams. And then also a little double dose here because whenever they showed off like a bunch of the sigils, I guess this is another reference to Game of Thrones. I've never watched it before, so I'd presume this is a reference to it. And with the Saints, they have a giant X. I don't know if that means something in Game of Thrones, but instead of Saints, it actually has the word Aints to the right of it when they're explaining all the different sigils. And man, oh man, they had a lot of fun with this one. I'll give them credit, though. It's definitely funny, but definitely some shade being thrown towards the New Orleans Saints, and it's great.
And you never would expect that this is one-way traffic. It goes from New Orleans up I-65 and 85 to Atlanta, and it absolutely comes back southwest from the A. We all get that. A little supplemental shade. Your boy, about 20 minutes ago, talking with Jeff Horchek of Caleb YTV10, and I said that, you know, the primetime games for the Saints this year, three of the four, it'll be Breeze versus really good top-notch quarterbacks. And then there's the Houston Texans, and all due disrespect, they just don't have that. Promptly, Jeff reminded me that, yeah, they've got some guy named Deshaun Watson. He's really, really, really good. And so shade on me, I forgot. It's not Brock Osweiler. It's not Tom Savage. They don't have one of those guys coming through the door. They got a potential Hall Pro of the future in Deshaun Watson. So sometimes when you point one finger out with shade, the other three, Clint, they come back at you.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
All right, CD, speaking of referees and calls, what's the call? This feels like one of those block or charge things on Twitter. Is it false start by Ben on throwing shade there, or is it offsides on the famous Clint D?
I'd probably go delay on game on the famous CD.
It could have been one or both of us. Either way,
yeah.
Sometimes you move it back 5 yards, you set it down, and you play freaking ball. All right, we got to hit our final break of hour number two. On the other side, Q&A replay with Ryan Terrio. Not just something LSU baseball fans will enjoy. He gives you insight into how he loves the Raging Cajuns. In fact, for a while, he thought he was coming to play here in Lafayette. That plus his stay in Major League Baseball. Now, we're getting you closer to LSU versus Florida. First pitch is now at 8 p.m. Pregame show at 7:30. CD and I inching you toward that moment. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We're having a lot of great moments here at the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game.
We're going back to our regular show.
All right, this is Acadiana's number one sports station.
And you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
Live online at 1037thegame.com.
Follow on Facebook and Twitter now
at 1037 The Game.
Oh, yeah, you can jump around if you want to, or just chill, but keep listening. Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back at it at the Tap Room River Ranch on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love here, having a blast, packed house. They're getting ready for Rhythms on the River. Starts at 6 tonight. Jones and Hollers playing here at 8 o'clock. And if you want to get excited, this interview would be a great reason to. Ryan Terrio joined the program, former LSU great, two-time World Series champ. He was with us on Tuesday during our stay at the Shrine on Airline. And I think this interview is going to stand the test of time, even 2 days later. It wasn't really all about that particular Pontiff Classic. It was about Wally Jr., and of course, Terrio was a great friend of his and a teammate. It was also about LSU baseball, Major League Baseball, and what they're doing with Traction Performance, some pretty cool stuff. So without any further ado, Q&A replay, my interview with Ryan Terrio.
You played in a couple of these games, obviously not the Pontiff Classic, but LSU versus Cajuns games. It was starting to bubble toward the surface during that time. What are your fond memories of that, if you will?
I was actually a verbal commit to the Cajuns, believe it or not. My brother played there and have a great relationship with Coach Babb and all the guys over there. You know, and they had some good teams, man. We went to Omaha. Both LSU and UL went to Omaha when we were there. Now, the reason why they lost is because they all dyed their hair, and that was stupid. So had they not done that, I think they would have been in better shape.
Are there any baseball traditions that you do like and that you do believe in, or is it just the bleached hair that'll get you every time?
Yeah, bleached hair is an absolute no-no in my book. I don't know. Like if I had a couple hits or a big game, man, I would try to eat the same thing, you know, the following day, stupid stuff like that. You know, but as far as like wearing, you know, the same socks or something like that, no, I didn't really buy into that too much. I did try to stick with my routine pregame, you know, like batting practice routine, whatever it is that I did in the cages, if I was going good.
All right, I'm going to treat you like an old man and ask you if you remember something back in the day. And I shared this with Wally Pontiff Sr. earlier in the show, man. But April 2001, right here in front of me, at what was then Zephyr Field, LSU beats the Cajuns 12-7. You led off, had a three-run triple in the game. Wally Jr. batted third and scored a run. I had to go dig that up earlier, and it was a mind blow for me. Do you remember it?
No, I don't. I don't remember a whole lot. Moscona always makes fun of me because I don't remember anything like as far as like certain plays and stuff that happened for my career. I mean, I do remember teammates and teams and you know, like an overall like bird's eye view, but specific things I do not remember. I'm sorry.
All right, no apologies needed. He's done a lot in his career. He is Ryan Terrio, good enough to join us on 103.7 The Game. If you're not following him on Twitter, do so, at rterrio7. I'm sure what you do carry are a lot of memories of friendship, being a teammate with Wally Poniff Jr. What can you tell us about time spent with him, not just on the field, but traveling? I mean, inside the dugout, in the locker room, your relationship with Wally Jr.?
You know, we saw Wally's greatness on the baseball field. I think everybody did. You know, to come to LSU and contribute the way he did as a young player, as a freshman, on a really, really good team, and then obviously to do it again as a sophomore and a junior. And you know, to go out there, he had a lot of hype and fanfare. People don't realize that. But to live up to that hype and fanfare the way he did is truly amazing. But, you know, knowing Wally a little bit differently, as good of a ball player as he was, he was a better person. I would say truly caring about his teammates. And when I think about great teammates and the traits that I want to instill in the guys that we train over here at Traction at Play Force, you know, that's one of those things, man, to love your teammates as much as you can and want them to succeed as much as you want yourself to succeed. And, Ben, Wally did that. I mean, he was the first one out of the dugout to congratulate you when you did well. When something didn't go your way, he was the first one to pick you up. You know, leadership quality at a young age, it's very rare you see a freshman be able to come in and lead. Wally had that. He had that ability. And, you know, just a special, special person all around. Like I said, you got to see the baseball, but there was a lot more to Wally Poniff Jr. than just baseball.
Ryan, like you, I grew up in Baton Rouge, but when you come to not just Metairie but the New Orleans area, it's even more incredible. I think the way that Wally Poniff Jr.'s name, his name rings out, and the Poniff name in general. I mean, how much have you run up against that when you travel to the Big Easy?
Absolutely. You know, Nick, obviously great career at LSU. You know, Big Wally's a legend. I still talk to Big Wally probably, you know, once every 2 or 3 months. Yes, amazing people, great people, like you said. But I mean, just that when you think about baseball in New Orleans, the first name that comes to your mind is Poniff. And, you know, it's funny, we have a nice little high school program here, and I called Big Wally. I said, hey, man, I need some players in New Orleans. He said, I got you, big guy. Give me about 30 minutes. Next thing you know, he's got 4 or 5 names of 5-star baseball players in the New Orleans area, so they're just so tied in. You don't get that way by doing people wrong. You know, when you're a good person, I think people gravitate toward you, and that's what those Poniffs do.
Another few moments with Ryan Terrio on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. We mentioned your World Series runs, 2011 with St. Louis, mm-hmm. 2012 with the San Francisco Giants. How different or similar were being on those two teams?
You know, very similar. I get asked that question quite a bit. Not super talent-laden, either one of them. You know, you had your good players. I wouldn't say we were the most talented, either one of those teams that I'd ever been on. You know, the Chicago Cubs in 07 and 08 were just absolutely loaded. The similarities in those two teams, as well as LSU in 2000 when we won the College World Series, was there was a genuine care in the locker room. Guys went out to dinner together. You know, you'd hang out with your teammates quite a bit, got to know your teammates. It was a family feel. You know, it didn't matter what part of the country you were from or if you were married or single. I mean, everybody was just friends and buddies. And in the major leagues, man, it's such a long season. So you're almost forced to be friends with the guys in the locker room. It wasn't a force for those two clubs. And you know, also there at the end, in both 11 and 12, there was a ton of adversity for both of those teams as far as facing some elimination games, and you really saw some guys step up that you know, hadn't necessarily done it throughout the season, but it meant so much to them. And man, to win the World Series back to back, talk about amazing, and definitely a dream come true, and something I'll never forget.
LSU football is pretty fond, as you know, of calling themselves DBU. Would you make a case that LSU baseball is heavy on one position or the other? Is it middle infield you when it comes to sending guys to the show?
Yeah, I think we've done pretty good. I mean, you go all the way back to Jeff Rabelais, and you know, one of the guys that I kind of idolized as a kid, and Reb had a great major league career, I think 16 years, and you know, Andy Sheets and Russ Johnson and Brandon Larson and you know, myself and Aaron Hill, you know, Bregman. I know I'm probably forgetting a couple guys, but you got Josh Smith there now who's poised to play professionally as well. And I would say probably middle infield you. Now, Alan Dunn has done an amazing job getting some arms down there, so I think you could probably make a case for starting pitcher you as well, but I'm kind of partial to the middle guys, so let's just say shortstop you for now. How about that?
I like it. And look, we'll wrap up with this. Talk with Ryan Terry on 103.7 The Game. In less than 30 minutes, we'll have Phil Devey on the program. Pitch for the Cajuns, 97-99. He said, yeah, we'll talk a little LSU-UL smack. Is there any of that left in you, or is that all just vacated from your system?
Man, look, there was – I never had like a felt a rivalry there. Man, I loved UL. I loved the Cajuns. Like I said earlier, I was friends with the coaches. I grew up as a kid going to their camps. You know, so the baseball camps in the summer, I'd do LSU, and then I'd do UL. My wife's from New Iberia, so I've got a camp down there at Sycamore Point that I share with my in-laws. And, yeah, it's nothing but love for me, man. I'm going to be honest with you. It ain't like playing the Green Wave. Now, that's a different story. I'm talking Tulane, and I got some action for those guys.
I like that a lot. Hey, keep doing what you're doing over at Traction. I'll let you tell your listeners on the way out just some of the strides that you, Max Chiwilli, and all the guys are making. Really cool. Breaking ground over in Hattiesburg, I saw.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, you know, to be able to provide, you know, the facilities that we do for the little guys is a dream come true for one of us. You know, we train professional athletes. I'd say roughly 200, 300 professional athletes come through strength, conditioning, speed development. And then, you know, the youth side is something that was a passion play for us initially. And then now this thing has grown so much to be playing on, you know, turf fields at a 52-acre complex for a T-ball kid is really cool. And so, like you said, we'll be in Hattiesburg the end of this summer, and the expansion is going to kind of keep going from there. Love to take it to New Orleans if we can. So we're kind of looking around, and we'll see what happens.
Brian, keep building and growing. Thank you again for doing this. We're looking forward to Tigers versus Cajun. Thanks for doing this with us.
You're the man, Ben. Thank you.
Ryan Terrio. Except no substitute. Guy does dynamite work, and I mean really good podcasting all over the video, just everywhere, with my good friend Matt Moscona across the basin. Appreciate him slumming it with us here in Acadiana. But in all sincerity, he was great. He is great. Grew up in Baton Rouge, as I mentioned in that interview. Went to Catholic of Baton Rouge. But you better believe everybody knew about the kid from Broadmoor. And he was on a very good team, by the way. You go back and look up some of the studs at the high school level that he played with. Broadmoor, I mean, those Bucks teams on the diamond were just out of this realm. And actually, during the majority of time I was there, memory serves, Catholic and Broadmoor were in the same 5A district. So, yeah, you got to see those Bucks time and again. They had a lot of talent, but I'm not sure anybody has come out of that program and made as much of a splash, as many waves as Ryan Terrio. All right, we're just about 2 hours down. That's one of those things when you wake up in the morning, you're told that you got a 90-minute show because LSU Florida are playing at 6, and when they moved to 8, now you got 3 hours. And so we roll on. No problem. We had so many great interviews this week. We've got a chance to air some of those back out. Plus, we got some fresh content planned in hour number 3 as well. In fact, what I can tell you is this. Talk about a hook. When we return, you'll hear from Tim Brando. And yes, when we spoke with the giant in Louisiana sports broadcasting, still a national sports commentator for Fox Sports, when we first spoke on Monday, Oliva was still AD at LSU. Scott Woodward was still AD at A&M. Neither of those things is true anymore. But it still stands the test of time as well, because his reflection on LSU and Will Wade, dynamite. Even more than that,
We spent two-thirds of the interview talking about Tiger Woods, what he did at the Masters, how improbable or probable it seemed to Tim, and the future for Tiger. You're going to want to catch this, so stick around. Plenty more show to go. I'm Ben Love, Clint Domingue in tow, and this is Bumper to Bumper Sports, hanging out with you from the Taproom River Ranch, bringing you home into your Good Friday on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your lives.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB, Karen Crow, Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah!
And now let's get started.
Firing off the blocks and in hour number three. I'm Ben Love, and you're listening to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game. Heck of a time, and we ain't done yet. From the Taproom River Ranch, the famous Clint D joins me from the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Clint loves correcting me. It's always fun when you get to turn the tables. Two-minute drill, poppycock. LSU has named a starter for tonight. First pitch is at 8 p.m. All right, that part's true. But when the Tigers take on the Florida Gators, Mikhail Hilliard, sophomore, will be on the bump. And there's a real possibility that Zach Hess comes out of the bullpen. One other note, as we begin our 6 o'clock hour, a bit of a Woj bomb. It's kind of a mini bomb, but we'll detonate it nonetheless. He's reporting that the New Orleans Pelicans, a day after officially announcing David Griffin as VP of Basketball Operations, the Pels are getting permission to discuss a senior front office role with Clippers assistant GM Trent Redden. And all reports indicate that Redden has been one of Griffin's most trusted advisors, so look for more of the Griffin way to be implanted in the Big Easy. Enough of that. Got to run back one of our best interviews in a long, long time. Tim Brando, a legend from North Louisiana, and these days, national sports commentator for Fox Sports. He waxed poetic with us on Tiger winning the Masters and the mess with LSU and Will Wade.
I want to start with Tiger Woods winning the Masters. Did you ever believe what unfolded yesterday was possible, especially during Tiger's deepest of kind of valleys?
Well, I believed it last week because I picked him to win on Twitter, and I picked him to win on a few other shows. I really thought that his game had come together and that Augusta National was in the right shape. And I didn't think really a lot of the greatest of players were playing maybe their best golf at this stage. You know, the big talk was the heavy money was on Rory McIlroy, and I didn't see that with him going into this week. And Woods, you knew for the last 6 months had been really preparing for this opportunity. I actually thought, and I particularly felt good about the thought that Phil Mickelson could be the one that could rival Tiger. And then after the 67 he had on day one, I was pumped up for the potential of that happening because, you know, Phil would have been the oldest ever to win a major and would have been by far the oldest to win at Augusta if he had won. And I still think he's got it in him. Mickelson's hitting the ball now as far as he's ever hit it. Tiger is not, obviously, he hits it a long way, but he's certainly not hitting it as far as Phil is, and he's not hitting it as far as most of his competitors. Francesco Molinari was, as you could see yesterday, was by him, and certainly Tony Finau was too. But the nuance around that golf course at Augusta and having played there so many more times than any of those other guys on the first two pages of the leaderboard really paid dividends for him. He played intelligently. He knew where to miss it. I don't think the other players necessarily did. He identified wind issues when maybe you need to look a little higher up when you're on number 12 tee, something that Molinari didn't do, nor did Finau, nor did Brooks Koepka. And he just played a very intelligent game and then attacked when the right time came. The fairway iron he hit on 15 was just immaculate. So, yeah, I thought he could do it, and he did. And
the culmination of his professional comeback now seems complete with this win. And I think it's made available to him only by his personal comeback being so great prior to that. I don't think that one would have happened without the other. And, I for a short time yesterday, this is a blanket statement, but I really believe it to be true. And I've seen some of the hatred that's still out there. When I write something positive about someone on Twitter, you're always going to get the loons that come back from the cesspool of message boards that now are on Twitter and say, blah, blah, blah. What about the scandal? What about the scandal? But for a little while yesterday afternoon, I think what we learned is that Tiger Woods, a golfer on a Sunday afternoon in Augusta, is capable of bringing together a very polarized country, both generationally and racially. That's what I took from it. And I thought, well, that's another reason why sports is so cool. It's one of the reasons why we love it to the extent that we do. And that was fantastic. And I don't care, really all ages, really appreciated it. In the aftermath of it, when you saw him walking back towards the cabin to sign his card, from Bernard Langer to Ricky Fowler in age groups there, you saw people that genuinely were happy for him. And I think his reaction to them, as well as to the patrons as he was leaving, high-fiving everyone from outside the ropes, that's very uncommon for the old Tiger Woods. This is the new and improved Tiger, and one that I will champion a great deal more than the over-glorified, well-packaged Nike product that he was when he first hit stardom.
Tim, I believe you've read my mind here. I want to ask you, which do you see as the bigger hurdle that Tiger's had to overcome, the physical setback surgeries or the emotional personal life turmoil? It sounds like you think one feeds into the other.
Well, I definitely think the second one doesn't happen without the first one having happened. And this has been true with a lot of golfers through the years. He wouldn't be the first. I remember my friend and a guy that I grew up with really in Shreveport, Hal Sutton, had a second season to his career in his 40s. In fact, during that period around 2000, he went mano a mano against Tiger when Tiger was number one in the world and beat him in the Players' Championship. And that was en route to Hal becoming a Ryder Cup captain a few years later. Hal had been out of the game and had all kinds of problems, had gone through four marriages, and he had finally gotten married, had some children, got his personal life probably in the best position it had ever been, and he was player of the year in his plus 40s. It happens with a lot of guys. Golf is such an individual game, and most of the great players will tell you that if you're not selfish in your approach from a business point of view, you're not going to succeed. And I think a lot of times that can spill over into players' personal lives and impacts them professionally later on in their careers. Hal was called Air Bear when he was coming out of Shreveport in 1983. He won the PGA his first year. Most people thought he'd win a gazillion, but he had all kinds of issues in his personal life, and his professional career path changed and was altered quite a bit. He was really out of the sport for a while, came back, and then had that second run that was just fantastic. So they're not as well documented or as chronicled as someone internationally known quite like Tiger, but for several golfers, I mean several big-name golfers, their personal lives were problematic, and it impacted them professionally. And then once they solved those issues, they came back, and because golf is a game where you can play a lot longer, you can have a second whiff. You can have a second chance at success, and that has certainly happened here with Woods. But in terms of what he went through physically, I can't imagine. I'm a 63-year-old that loves to play golf three times a week, and I'm popping ibuprofen like most guys my age before I play and after I play. And he's out there competing with these young guns that are incredible that he helped make because of his greatness, in the late 90s and early 2000s. These kids were just being born, and he's out there not only competing with them, but beating them now. That's amazing, particularly to have gone through the rash of injuries, and that at one point within the last 2 years he was unable to walk or pick up his kids. That just that had to be incredibly difficult from a physical point of view. But that again goes back to the personal side. I think if you don't understand that there's something more important than you in your life, then you don't get to the point where he was, so that he could finally make this about face and turn in his career, and take those of us that were once critics and get adulation from us in the second go round. That's the thing that's amazing to me. I made a point to another gentleman the other day. I said I can't imagine an individual athlete that has changed his image any more than Tiger Woods, maybe since George Foreman. If you're old enough to remember George Foreman before he lost to Muhammad Ali in the rope-a-dope, and then you met him about 5 years after that when he went through all the things in his life that he did, and then he made this incredible comeback to win a heavyweight championship, he was like one of the most beloved, happy-go-lucky teddy bear figures, and got all these endorsements with the George Foreman grill and you name it. It was a completely different individual. And I think to some extent, Tiger's path has been a little bit similar to that.
We're joined by the great Tim Brando, national sports commentator for Fox Sports. Turning our attention to Will Wade, his reinstatement by LSU. Who draws your ire the most in the way that this situation has unfolded?
Oh, gosh, just the system. You know, I'm not gonna take shots, any more shots at the individuals that I already have. I think you've read my tweets, and you've certainly heard maybe past interviews that I've had. But just understand it from this standpoint. Everything that is wrong with intercollegiate athletics, literally everything that's wrong with intercollegiate athletics, is on display with what's going on in Baton Rouge right now. There's simply no upside whatsoever. No one in a leadership position has taken responsibility and accountability for the abandonment of that basketball team that won a conference championship and went into March Madness without its leader as its head coach. The school is not being accountable. The athletic administration literally running to the hinterlands to protect what other than themselves. And then the coach who determines, no, it's not in his best interest to meet with his bosses until long after his team has gone through what the March road is all about. He needed to be there with his team. And if he is so misunderstood, and if he is literally being taken out of context by whatever was reportedly on those wiretaps, he should have been shouting at the mountaintop, get me back with my team, get me back with my team. None of that happened. And this reinstatement statement from the athletic director's office is another farce. Nowhere in there does it say we suddenly believe our coach, or that we believe that he'll be there for multiple years, or the length of the remaining years of his contract. None of that is there. It's legal mumbo-jumbo, all brought on from a coach who is lawyered up and an athletic administration that has doesn't have the legal means to handle the lawyer that's handling Will Wade, who also handles Sean Miller in Arizona, handles Bruce Pearl in Auburn, and Will just was a little late to the gate to get the right guy to make sure that he could be reinstated. The bottom line here from my point of view, and I'm looking at it from 3,000 feet in, is that I've been in this business long enough to know when no one's being honest with me, and no one's being honest with me. Until somebody in a position of leadership, whether it's the president of the university, the athletic director of the university, or the head coach, says something to me that's not in a written statement of legal mumbo-jumbo, none of them have any credibility with me whatsoever, and they have become a national embarrassment to my home state, and I don't take that lightly.
Tim, incredibly well said. Unfortunately, we're out of time. I'd love to do this again. Thank you for doing it today.
You bet. Happy to be with you.
He was making 12, I think.
That
Not often I run into somebody with a better voice than me either. Happened there. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports. We'll be right back out to the Taproom River Ranch. More fun coming at you on 103.7 The Game.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before.
Cork. Now the tape.
Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Back into the Taproom River Ranch, ready to pivot, switch topics. More Bumper to Bumper Sports coming at you on 103.7 The Game. From Tim Brando to a guy that's actually younger than me, but he's doing big things. Chandler Rome with the Houston Chronicle, an Astros beat writer. Astros had a double-digit win streak disrupted, but they're getting back at it against the Rangers tomorrow night. Here's my Q&A replay with Chandler Rome.
The Astros, they're going to be glad when this 8-game road streak is over, but so far it's been a part of a 9-game winning streak. How have the Astros turned around what was a relatively slow start to the season, even with maybe a step up in competition, especially against the Mariners?
I mean, they've just hit the ball. I mean, plain and simple, that's it. When they started 2-5, they had a .667 team OPS. They weren't hitting well with runners in scoring position. Carlos Correa didn't play the first three games, and the lineup just kind of felt incomplete. And then when they got home, Carlos Correa was healthy. Jose Altuve started hitting every ball he saw out of the ballpark. They're getting contributions from different guys at the bottom of their order every game, it seems. You know, Tony Kemp got on base twice yesterday, kind of kick-started a rally. Jake Marisnik's having a better offensive start to his season. It seems like every time they ask Aledmys Diaz to play, which is not very much, he's only playing, you know, once every 3 or 4 days, he comes in and does something well. So they're really getting contributions up and down their lineup. Michael Brantley drove in the tying runs yesterday. So up and down right now, they're pitching it really well, but I think what's really going under talked about really is how well their bullpen's throwing. I think we know that the starting pitching is really good, and I think we know that what Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander can do, but how their bullpen has thrown in the last 8-10 games is really exceeded, I think, a lot of expectations. Obviously, they have Roberto Osuna and Ryan Pressly at the back that give you that comfort. Pressly hasn't allowed an earned run in 25 straight appearances, and then Osuna's 16-for-16 on save since he got to the Astros. But Will Harris is throwing well. Hector Rondon is throwing the ball really well. They've got Brad Peacock down there right now, who gave them a really long and effective outing in relief of Wade Miley on Friday. So I think it's all sort of clicking right now, and I know it's early, and I know you don't want to overreact to a just like you didn't want to overreact to an early season 2-5 start. You don't want to overreact to a 9-game winning streak. But the way this team's playing right now is kind of the way that everyone expected them to play coming into the season. They look pretty lethal.
Chandler, let's talk about a major cog in the machine offensively, defensively for that matter, and a local product. Alex Bregman, he comes back from a hamstring injury, didn't play Friday at Seattle, but he did Saturday and Sunday, went a combined 1-for-7. I guess what could you share about how he's coming along coming back from injury?
Yeah, I don't think it was a serious injury, but I think the Astros have the luxury of having a lot of different infielders in the way that they can move their infield around. They just didn't want a chance it with him. So I don't think it's anything to monitor throughout the year. He had a more major hamstring injury in 2016, and he's adamant that this is nowhere near what that was. So I think long term he's okay, but obviously I think fans are more used to him producing a little bit more offensively. But he's when you don't play for 2 or 3 days, it's hard to get back into the rhythm, and he hasn't maybe had the. He had a couple of games here and there out on the homestand where he really was hitting the ball well. You could tell he was locked in. But he's been a little bit inconsistent for Alex Bregman's standards at the beginning of the year, and I think the hamstring may have had something to do with that. But you got to remember, he's hitting at a part of their order where he's got to be pitched to, because Jose Altuve's hitting in front of him. Michael Brantley and Carlos Correa are hitting behind him. So he's going to get pitches to hit. It's just going to be one of those things where he's got to keep the ball in the air but on a line. When he starts elevating the ball, when he starts getting under balls, it's not really what you want from Alex Bregman. He wants to be a guy that is kind of a line drive hitter to all fields, keeping his swing level. And when you see him doing that, he's locked in offensively. And I think the last couple of games you've seen him get under a couple pitches, elevate some, hit some fly balls up in the air, and that's not what you want from him.
He is Chandler Rome, and he throws a blanket over Astros beat coverage, joining us live from Oakland, California. And you mentioned the starting pitching. We know how good they can be. And after Verlander, after Cole, then suddenly you get to Colin McHugh. He'll pitch tomorrow night in Oakland. Wade Miley pitches Wednesday night in Oakland. How do you evaluate the way that the other guys outside of the top two have pitched so far?
I think you can't really ask for much more than what Colin McHugh has given you. Colin McHugh has – you've seen the new slider he has. He refined it last year in the bullpen as a reliever and kind of rode that to a sub-2 ERA. But the slider is such an important part of his repertoire now. He's moved away from being the sort of four-seam, the cutter and fastball eccentric pitcher. He's now incorporating that slider to both righties and lefties. And he's got the strikeouts to prove. He's got 22 strikeouts in his first 17 innings. He's really throwing the ball well. And I don't think anyone ever doubted that because he was a 19 game winner a couple of years ago and only went into the bullpen because the Astros had a surplus of starters. So, I mean, this guy is a starting pitcher and he's a good one at that. You don't win 19 games in the big leagues by accident. I think Wade Miley, probably will take a little more getting used to just for Astros fans just because he's a little bit of a different kind of pitcher. He's not going to be a guy that strikes a lot of people out. He's going to give up hits. He's going to give up contact. And one of the things with him is if he's not commanding his pitches, then it can be a long night for him. And you kind of saw that in his last outing on Friday in Seattle. Wasn't commanding great. He wasn't missing by much, but wasn't commanding the baseball great. I think he's starting to figure out that teams are zoning in on his cutter, which is the pitch that he kind of revitalized his career with last season in Milwaukee. And he's going to have to find a way to still incorporate that cutter and still use it because it is a good pitch, but he's going to have to find some different ways to get hitters out. But he'll get there, and then the Astros have enough advanced analytics that they'll find something to kind of refine with him. And then Brad Peacock will go back in the rotation next week. But I think, again, with him, he's kind of matched McHugh in this. He's going to throw a lot of sliders. He's going to throw some four-seamers. And, you know, he's been a starter before. He's been a reliever before. I think Peacock's really given you anything you can ask for. So I think, all in all, the back end of the rotation has probably exceeded, I guess, preseason expectations. But if you ask them directly, I think that this is what the organization sort of expected.
I love talking leadership, Chandler, and not necessarily a rah-rah standpoint, but this franchise for so long seemed to lean on guys like Marwin Gonzalez. He's gone now. Brian McCann, no longer with them. Who gives them that edge now? Is it still some combination of Springer, Bregman, Verlander, or is there really another influence in that locker room that you think they like to gravitate toward?
I think Jose Altuve, though he's not vocal, he's not a guy that's going to be rah-rah on the field. He's not a Verlander type that goes on Twitter and says stuff and, you know, will be kind of the spokesman. I think Altuve carries more weight in the clubhouse than I think a lot of onlookers may think. He just the way he goes about his business and the way he carries himself, he's very much a lead by example, a lead by respect sort of guy. I think he's one of, if not the most respected human beings in that clubhouse. And I think certainly he's a guy that kind of keeps that team grounded, though he may not do it in a way that a Verlander does it or even a way that Gerrit Cole does it. Both of those guys are pretty outspoken, and both of those guys will, you know, when they've got to be rah-rah, they'll be rah-rah. And I think Jose Altuve certainly, and that may be kind of a cop-out answer because, I mean, he's the reigning MVP. He was an MVP in 2017. But I think where he gets dinged a little bit and probably not right is – that he doesn't really have that much of a leadership role. Well, I'm here to tell you that he does. And I think he carries more weight in that clubhouse than a lot of people would give him credit for.
Also a guy that once spoke to me in Spanish on an interview that we played on the air. Good guy, Jose Altuve. We got to take a break. Coming right back. More of Hour 3 coming your way. We're going to let you hear a little from our guy, Wally Poniff Sr. He was magnificent, as always, on Tuesday at the Shrine on Airline. We'll run it back next. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, getting you closer to LSU Florida baseball, live from the Taproom River Ranch. The show, not the baseball game, on 103.7 The Game.
Football
season can't come fast enough.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
No.
Are we there yet?
You little...
Luckily, you have Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love to help get you by.
The home stretch, we come. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, right back in to the Taproom River Ranch on 103.7 The Game. Show over at 5:30? Hardly. We're taking it to 7, and then we go in 30-minute increments from there, right? The new pregame show for LSU Florida Baseball is set for 7:30. Chris Blair along with Doug Thompson, first pitch from the box is at 8. So everything pushed back 2 hours due to the weather. And right now, the sun is shining outside of the Taproom River Ranch with any luck. And Twitter shows me that this is probably the case. That's happening in the capital city as well. And so baseball, it's coming shortly. As we run back our final dynamite interview from the week, something that we just had to make sure you got here on a Thursday, we went to the Wally Pontiff Jr. Classic. 4 straight years I've been able to broadcast from that great event on Tuesday. Every single year, Wally Pontiff Sr. is good enough to come on with me in the 4 o'clock hour. This time, he straight up led off the show, and he was fantastic. A guy that's not only big in LSU circles, he's a huge Tony Robichaux fan, a former Tulane assistant. He's basically like the mayor in New Orleans. He was wonderful in explaining this event, talking about the childhood of Wally Jr., his other son, Nicholas, the future of this game, which will move to LSU and Tulane starting next year. Heck, I could go on and on explaining it, but it'd be better if we just played it back, and so we will. Q&A replay, my interview with a great friend of the program, Wally Pontiff Sr. LSU-UL, the final time for now. It'll be the sixth time that these two have played in the 16 meetings with the Wally Pontiff Jr. Classic. The previous five have been decided by 4 runs or less, but... You know, you and I were having a conversation off air. We need to bring it on air. You had the opportunity to watch your son, Wally Jr., your other son, Nicholas, play at so many different levels of baseball. What was your favorite? And I'm talking about watching them, but then also coaching them, because we know you did that as well.
My favorite time, I would say, Ben, would be the 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old, where they still want to learn. They're sponges. You can influence them, teach them about the game of life and the game of baseball. And more important, than when they leave you, they can go to the coach and then they can do their own thing as they get there. But that was my best time as a coach and as a father. But I was a dad first. Just wanted to let you know that. The other part, watching the game, I enjoyed them all from high school to college. Didn't realize how big LSU was from a perspective of a parent. And because the people, they know your son, but they want to touch you too. And I'm saying, I ain't got nothing to do with it. So it was a beautiful thing, and how they embrace you, the fans and the people of LSU. It's been an awesome day. Awesome.
Ben Love live at the Shrine on Airline, and we're joined. He's our leadoff man, Wally Pontiff Sr. In a few moments, we'll talk about the Wally Pontiff Jr. Foundation and some of the new things you all continue to do to help not only youth baseball, but just kids in New Orleans. At LSU and throughout the state of Louisiana. When you think of LSU versus UL, my guess is you would say times have changed a little bit. It's been heated, but, boy, this has just been really solid baseball between programs and coaches that have respect for each other lately.
You know what? I love Coach Robichaux. I've always loved him since he was took the job. The rivalry against LSU and Lafayette has been awesome. His team plays with just energy, they have class, and they play the game the right way. And he has been such a wonderful guy. I'm going to miss him after this year, but hopefully we'll get him back soon. Their team, their university, their fans have been terrific.
And no traffic. Well, knock on wood. I didn't have any because I came early, but it was easy coming over on I-10, and you expect another sellout tonight.
I think we should be somewhere around the 9,000, 10,000 mark. And I want to thank the people from this area and all over that come every year to play in this game and to see the LSU Tigers and ULL tonight. One of the biggest reasons why this happened is because of Skip Bertman, I mean, the legend. But more important, I wanted people to see LSU because Wally, growing up, never saw LSU play until he put a uniform on at Tiger Stadium opening day, because he was playing all the time on Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. So this gives him a chance to see LSU live, and it's been a wonderful thing. And it's all for the kids to see how important it is to get an education and to meet friends for a lifetime.
And I think fans of LSU and UL are going to see some of the other guys tonight. What do I mean by that? Paul Maneri has said recently maybe 23 of his scholarship, not scholarship, but 23 of his 35-man roster are healthy for tonight. I know for Tony Robichaud on the Cajun side, they're dealing with a bit of a mass unit as well. So I expect a lot of pitchers tonight as both of these teams have to turn around and play big series starting on Thursday. I think you're going to get to see some youth tonight in this ballgame.
Oh, I think so, Ben. And more important, that both of these teams want to win one tonight.
That's right.
You want to take that that win into the next series. And LSU's got Florida, and I think y'all got Texas.
Texas Arlington.
And so that's big series there. And more important, I think they want to, the young guys who are going to get opportunity to show them they can do something.
I don't have any doubt about it. Now, we got to talk a little bit about the future. This time next year, it'll be LSU versus Tulane, and that's a place where, hey, you've got a lot of connections. You coached there for a time, so a lot of love for the Green Wave and an opportunity to bring a little different flavor into this ballpark, but I'm sure to continue packing it out.
Oh, I think it's going to be great. I think I've always wanted Tulane and LSU to play. And bringing it back, they missed a game this year. Bring it back and play at Zephyr at the Shrine is a beautiful thing for us. They excited. They wanted to do it. We wanted them to do it. And that Coach Maneri all agreed. And I think we'll have that same kind of crowd.
How much, if at all, as we continue our conversation with Wally Poniff Sr., does it change things that there won't be a AAA organization here anymore? I know that the Baby Cakes will be moving on, and that's sad for the area, but doesn't change things for the Poniff Classic, correct?
No, well, hopefully not, but I'm going to have a meeting right after this game. I'm going to start talking to some people in the parish, find out what direction they're going in. We hope that we can continue the game as long as I'm here and love to play it right here. We got to see what's going to happen. I know they're working on an opportunity to have a double-A team come into here. Whatever it is, we thank the people with the Baby Cakes that made it special, all the people that run the park. But there's a special young man, Alex Knutson, who's been unbelievable, who puts this all together, works real good with us. And we're excited. I think that we'll be here next year. Absolutely.
I don't have any doubt. I have to ask you now about the work that you and your family and your friends from all around this community, this state, and the world continue to do with the Wally Poniff Jr. Foundation. Again, I'll encourage our listeners to go to the website, do what you can to assist Wally Poniff Jr., that's J-R, not spelled out, wallyponiffjr.org. This thing has spread like wildfire. The things you're able to do, it's just got to set you on fire.
It makes us feel great. And the reason why, Wally always told me, so when he graduates, if he goes to pro ball or doc, he wants to give back. We're just keeping his dream alive. And what we do, we don't have any specifics what we do, but every year we get a bunch of names from our board and we put them together and we pick 10 people, 10 groups, and we send out a check to each one of those. Don't even tell them our name or nothing, just mail a check out, and it's almost Christmas, it's in July. And we've touched a lot. And just a little few of the places, Son of the Saint, Paws for Vets, Delgado Baseball, St. Jude, Cancer Research, Sister Service of Merit, Miracle League, Jesuit, LSU, Delgado. I mean, all of the playground, we built cages, kids to be a part. So there's so many that, and we weren't specific where we wanted to go. We wanted to just leave it open.
I could tell you this, in the hallway of the press box, right before the show started, I ran into Ronnie Rance, and I arm wrestled him into coming on this show later. He'll do that in the 6 o'clock hour, but he said, when you see Wally, remind him that I grew up playing on some of the parks that now the foundation is helping to subsidize and improve. And, I mean, just how cool is that generationally making a difference?
It makes us feel tremendous. And, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know if Wally would be happy that we're doing a game in his name. He's happy that we are giving back to the community. So we love coming and doing this, but he would rather not do it, if he was here. But more important, he knows we're doing it for the love of the game and love of people to help young kids who never got an opportunity to see LSU play or never had an opportunity to really watch the game of baseball. and we go to these parks, they're excited, you know, and we're excited to see them.
I had a moment during some research earlier that blew me away, and I wanted to share it with you. We're scheduled to have Ryan Terrio on the program in the 5 o'clock hour. Ryan and Wally played right here in front of us in April of 2000. It was LSU versus UL. Then at Zephyr Field, it was an 8-2 win. I'm sorry, let me back that up. It was April 2001 they played here. 12-7, it was a win for LSU. Ryan led off, had a three-run triple. Wally batted in the three-hole and scored a run right here in front of where you and I are looking right now. When you think back on games and memories like that, and it's still these two programs, I know a different coach on one side, how incredible.
That's a beautiful thing. When you see these kids, I wanted those kids at LSU or UL to get the same feeling I had when I watched my son. I wanted those parents to know. And it's been a beautiful thing. And to know that they were here one day playing. And then I had my son Nicholas come and play. We played UNO the longest game. I think it was 15 innings. We ended up winning. You know, and he played that game, got a big hit. And, you know, that's, to me, tops it off.
This night has to mean something to you and your family that I can't even imagine. But I know you, and you like talking shop when it comes to baseball. In fact, we were doing it before the program started. You feel pretty good about this LSU pitching staff. It's just a matter maybe of some of the hitting coming around.
I do. I think LSU's pitching staff is going to help them carry them through. Sometimes you got your hitting. I think the pitching staff, their focus, I think the starters are going to give. And I think, you know, as we go further, I think any two out of three series we should be able to win. I think our pitchers are good enough, and the closers, great, Fontenot and those guys, and Peterson and all. So I'm excited about the LSU Tigers, and I think they're going to play better ball as we go forward and get healthy.
You seem especially excited about the prospects of Cole Henry, this freshman out of Alabama.
Oh, I think this guy is a big league pitcher. Got a great demeanor on the mound, very focused, very polished, very smooth. Mine's a little bit of Aaron Nola. I think this boy's got nothing but upside, and when he goes, he comes right at you.
And, Wally, it's interesting you mentioned Jesuit High earlier. You've got a special connection with that great institution. But it also produced a kid that's playing on the UL side right now. And this time 2 years ago, you and I were talking about Jack Burke, who played, I believe, as a redshirt freshman, started this game 2 years ago. I don't think we'll see him tonight because he's become pretty integral over the weekends for Tony Robichaud, but that's got to be a kick for you.
Oh, I love Jack. I knew his family. I see relatives of his, and he dates a young lady that I know's family very well. More important, that I wanted LSU to give a shot at him, and they decided that they had some other people in mind. I knew he was going to mature. It looks like he got bigger. He's weighing about 220 now, 215, and he's healthy. And I'm happy for him, and hopefully he'll get a shot at pro ball.
Wally, as always, we come right out of the chute with you. We love doing this. Thank you for welcoming us in. Anything else that you want to tell our listeners throughout the Acadiana area, people streaming, please let them know.
I'd love to tell them, well, make sure you tell your mom and dad, your children, you love them every day. Give them a hug. Don't take anything for granted. Each day is a special day. And, Ben, you're doing a great job of delivering this message, so I thank you.
You know, we appreciate you. Wally Pontiff Sr., and again, we're going to encourage our listeners, visit the website, wallypontiffjr.org. Hopefully I see you before next year, my friend.
My man, Ben, you're invited anytime.
I appreciate
thank
it.
You.
I appreciate everything.
Thank you.
I listened to it, and even still, the poise that he has, the things he's doing, carrying on his son's name, and the legacy he's creating in the name of Wally Pontiff Jr., remarkable. I also don't mind sharing with you, as we're about to hit our final break of the program, I did, after that interview and that show was over, I did, before going into the actual game, call my mom, call my dad, call my brother, and call my wife. I told every one of them that I loved them. So, Wally, your message has been received, and I promise I'm not the only one. All right, we are going to take that final break. Full three-hour tour comes to a conclusion on the other side. Don't go anywhere. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, hanging out at the Taproom River Ranch. It's still a packed house. We'll bring you back to it on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Let's get back to more of Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports, where we practically wrote the rules of football on 103.7 The Game.
Uh-huh.
like a little chipmunk style CD. I think that's what I heard. I believe. This is Bumper to Bumper Sports, and I know we're right back in to close out the show on 103.7 The Game. The Taproom River Ranch has been on fire today. Yeah, I know. Rhythms on the River is a part of it. A lot of people being off of work and school tomorrow. That's the other part of it. And there's some that are just excited about Jones and Holler. Soul music coming here at 8 o'clock. Again, they'll be laying it down. Live music, no cover, a lot of fun. 8 until 11 here at the Taproom River Ranch. Busy show today. Thought we'd have 90 minutes. We had a full 3 hours. Hey, lucky us. And lucky you. The weather's clearing up. LSU Florida baseball rescheduled for 8 p.m. from the box tonight. Every indicator so far is they're on track for that. And Mikhail Hilliard will get the start on the mound for Alan Dunn and Paul Maneri. So interesting, the sophomore, who they've been ramping up almost exclusively as a midweek guy, he'll get his turn against the perennial powerhouse that's a little down this year. So LSU versus Florida, Mikhail Hilliard will get the start. And according to a report from Paul Maneri earlier today, decent chance that Zach Hess comes out of the pen in relief. Maybe tonight, almost certainly at some point during the three-game set, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, LSU playing Florida. Same general format. Cajuns at UTA Thursday through Saturday as everybody's getting it done before Easter Sunday. So Mikhail Hilliard will start. Zach Hess could be in relief, if not tonight. Certainly one of the next two games, he is an option. Your big news story, we let off with it. Spent much of our number one on this topic. Scott Woodward is officially LSU's new athletic director. This was made official by LSU this morning. Reported by Billy Lucci, TexAgs.com last night. And, as I told you, some 2.5 hours ago, LSU did its due diligence. This was a month-long process to where they finished the deal. They had their guy in place before they fired the current guy. They knew the new guy. And the new guy, well, he's an old name. He's familiar in these parts. And I am told that Woodward will have the power needed to do his job, not to be undercut, undermined by the Board of Supervisors. At least those are the assurances that he's been given from what I've been told. It's also pretty clear to me that everyone is about to be aligned if they aren't yet. From John Bel Edwards, the governor, on down to Richard Lipsey, one of the biggest backers of LSU, and I would imagine soon John Bel Edwards, as well as Scott Woodward. And I would think F. King Alexander is next in the chopping block. You can bet your bottom dollar his replacement will be somebody who is from Louisiana and who is a Lipsey type of guy. That's an educated guess on my part. Finally, a theory that we cultivated mid-show yesterday. It evolved with a conversation that a caller generated. I've been told is actually not far-fetched. The idea that LSU won't have to pay Aliva a buyout because they reassigned him, we know that part's true. But the theory being that if and when F. King Alexander's let go, which I think is a matter of time, I believe it's a win, not an if. So when that happens, and the people under him are cut, Aliva might just get cut with him, officially canned from LSU, and not only will the Tigers avoid paying him a buyout, they won't have to pay him anything if he just gets let go with Alexander's staff. It's a cruel world. We'll see if that part plays out, but the rest of it, I can tell you, is exactly what's going on in Baton Rouge, and it's how everything transpired over the last 24 hours, at least publicly. All right, big show today. That means a lot of thank yous need to be issued. Ted Scott, 19-year PGA Tour caddy, currently on the bag for Bubba Watson, was with us at 4:15. Highly recommend you listen on demand if you missed it. You can go to 1037thegame.com or the free mobile app. Just click or tap on demand. Ted waxed poetic on what it was like to be there Sunday at Augusta National when Tiger won the Masters. Plus, his guy, Bubba Watson, coming to New Orleans for the Zurich Classic. He's got a very exciting partnership there. And, well, just what it means for Phil Mickelson to be showing off some of his funnier side. So our thanks again to Ted Scott, as well as Hunt Palmer, talking all things LSU baseball, and our main man, Jeff Horchek, plus Trooper, the two of them. Join us every Thursday at the 5 o'clock hour. It has been nothing short of our treat. Final thank you goes out to the famous Clint D. We doubled the expected show length today. I think we pulled it off, brother. You know, I appreciate you. Now we got to get out of here. I got to go find a beer. and then run into a great performance from Jones and Hollers beginning at 8 o'clock. This has been Bumper to Bumper Sports, and we'll be back tomorrow live from Rufino's on the River. Come out and join us. We'll have Ruff and Roderick, James Moran, Blaine Viator, and more. That'll be a Friday B2BS on the Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com. Don't forget LSU, Florida, coming up soon right here.